Okay, thank you very much for the invitation. I've got the information from Ronnie that I should prepare something, kind of introductory lectures, and then the title appeared on the website, which is here, Introduction to Quantum Thermodynamics, History and Prospects. So this is the same title as the chapter which we wrote with Ronnie Kostos for the book on quantum thermodynamics. But I decided to divide my talk into two parts. So the first one could be indeed a very, very brief history of quantum thermodynamics. It's a very personal view, so I apologize everybody who can feel not comfortable with this, because there are so many paths in the story of what we can call quantum thermodynamics, but there are also different names for this. I will try to maybe to refresh your memory to some particular results and mathematical models. And the second part I would like to devote to some discussion of the simplest model, essentially. I would say it's the simplest model of quantum open system, which still possess many, if not all, relevant properties for these topics. And it also illustrates some difficulties and also some problems which can appear in this, in the description of open system, and sometimes disregarded, or I think I can say that also many confusions which appear in this field can also be illustrated in a simple way using this spin boson model. So, starting with the history, it is of course very nice to have Albert Einstein as the father of quantum thermodynamics, but we can say so because essentially this was the first application of thermodynamics ideas to quantum system to get some very particular results. So the idea that there is stimulated emission in the process of interacting of electromagnetic field with matter was motivated by the analysis of thermodynamical properties in thermal equilibrium. Then there is also another much later paper which shows that maser or lasers, which were very popular in those days among also theoretical physicists, they also can be treated as machines, as quantum engine. Okay, so then in the end of the 60s, so which I still remember, there was a very fast development of the theory of what we can call now quantum open systems. It started with some more heuristic approach in the end of 60s. And then in the 70s, there was also a very strong activity in the field of mathematical description. So in those days, the basic mathematical structures, which are sound, were established. So then I will also say a few words about this. And I will reduce essentially to the one of possible approaches, namely to reduce dynamics which lead to master equation. Because reduced dynamics, as you all know, is also behind the inference functional method of Feynman and Verdon. So they wanted also to reproduce the dynamics of the system alone, this system S, which interacts with bus by averaging in sense of path integral over the degrees of freedom of the bus. So, what I mean by reduced dynamics, something that you all know very well. So we have a total system. We assume that in the initial state we know the density matrix describing the system, and then we can apply a total unitary dynamic. So this is important that on this step, on the level of the total system, which is in fact the universe, then we can apply unitary dynamics to get some final state of the joint system. And then producing partial traces, we can get the reduced state, the reduced density matrix of the system which are interesting for us. So, and this is already a funny story because you can find quite a number of papers where the authors claim that this is enough to get a map between these two objects. It's of course not a map, it's a set of pairs, but it cannot be generally a map. To get a map from the initial state of the system to its final state, you need additional arrow. You have to close this path. Then we can define a map. And this additional arrow is a kind of assignment map, as often called, which maps from the states of our system to the state of the total system. So we need to imagine in somehow the procedure of embedding our system into the whole universe. And it can be defined at the beginning, otherwise we do not get any reduced dynamics. From such axiomatic point of view, if you add some assumption about this assignment map, for example, that it's fine, so it means that preserve mixtures of states and preserve, of course, the positivity of density metric. And then we add some kind of consistency relation that we, when we go back, we get the initial state. We have no choice. The only map is a product map. And this is what is used in the most application, but of course we are not always happy with this for different physical reasons, because assuming product map is essentially assuming from the beginning that there is weak interaction between system and the bus. Otherwise we cannot believe that this assumption is very accurate. But the fact is that as far as I know, I didn't find any well-motivated physical examples of this assignment map which are not product state. There are, of course, some proposals, some attempts, but still it's not very well-motivated from the, say, some experimental, some application to experimental situation. So then, as I said, in the 70s, the abstract theory of this reduced dynamics has been developed. And first one has to put some more details into the structure. So we have a system. We can have also the bus, which consists of many particular bus, for example, each of them in at equilibrium state, but at different temperature, if you want. To model engines, we need a bus with different temperature. And then we have the structure that we have also some control. So it means that the part of the environment is described in deterministic way, that there is some kind of control on the system, which is given by time-dependent Hamiltonian. And then we have the solution of the Schrödinger equation in terms of propagator for the total system. And again, the starting point is this definition of the dynamical map when we fix T0 and T, we have a single dynamical map given by the standard expression with the product state assignment map. So then we have a map for sure. And in the beginning of 70s, it was clear that mathematicians already prepared the whole theory for this, started in 50s. So the theory of completely positive maps on C-star algebras, but when applied to physics, it's essentially quite simple. One can prove that each such map can be represented by a kind of sandwich with operators on Hilbert spaces, and to preserve normalization, to preserve the trace of the density matrix, we need this kind of normalization properties. And the same relation is an opposite direction. So if you have map which is completely positive, then you can construct for this map embedding into some larger system and some unitary, and you can reconstruct this map as a reduced dynamical map. The main attractive property of this completely positive map from the mathematical point of view is that they are consistent when you put tensor products of this map corresponding to different physical systems, it's still completely positive. So this is why the completely positive maps are essentially used in the dynamics, in the description of dynamics, I think in most papers. So then the question is how to, because this formula is nice, but it's very difficult to compute anything there. And we like to have in physics, so this is all tradition, to have a differential equation of motions. So we want to use now the time dependence and construct some differential equations for the time-dependent density matrix. In some sense, there is always a trivial kind of differential equation. You can always write the dynamics, I said almost always, in the following form, which is called local in time. But the price is that this L is extremely complicated, and moreover, in some points can be not invertible, so that makes no sense. But okay, almost always in principle you can, by some small perturbation, you can always get this kind of equation. But this is not a really nice master equation which can be useful for anything, except very simple models which are exactly solvable.
But what are cases where this doesn't work? I mean, you're saying you formally can always write it as a differential equation. It's just it may be very, very ugly.
Yes, it may be ugly, so. But in principle, right, up to some measure zero times, where you can have some infinite jumps, you can write such equation. But you don't have any structure of this, so no mathematical structure above the form of this LT can be provided. So the simplest case is a kind of axiomatic approach. So we enforce some Markovian property on the evolution. So assuming that in certain approximation it could be a good model. So here is a Markovian dynamics in the sense that the dynamical map as functions of T forms semi-group, so it means that they can be composed and then produce this new dynamical map. Therefore, by say general mathematics, we can write them in the form of the exponential of certain generator. And now we have much more information. At least for finite dimensional systems, or for infinite dimensional, but when this generator is bounded, so this is mathematical condition, we have the most general form of such operator which appears in master equations, so that super operator acting on density matrix. It possesses a Hamiltonian part, and this dissipative part, which can be written as at least two variants, which are popular. I'm used for over 40 years to write it like that, as a master degree student of Kosakowski, who was one of the authors of this of the paper where this general form was produced. So it was done independently. So Lindblad did more generally for infinite dimensional Hilbert spaces, but with bounded generator. And Gorini, Kosakowski, and Sudarshan derived the same result, but only for finite dimensional Hilbert spaces. And of course, even earlier, these kind of equations were derived by some people. For example, Davis already in 1974 produced a paper on Markovian master equation. Was not aware about complete positivity and things like that, but obtained a class of dynamical of master equation on this form by using so-called weak coupling limit. This weak coupling limit in more or less less rigorous form is essentially a basic tool of derivation of Markovian master equations in the quantum theory open system. There is also another approach which is less used, unfortunately, because I think it's applicable to many interesting examples, is low density limit, which was in the rigorous version presented by Rolf Dimke somewhere in the beginning of the 80s. So the basic idea of the derivation is the existence of the certain separation of time scales. So the time scales, it's also a bit more complicated than it's usually presented. It's not only the difference between time scale of relaxation in the bath and time of relaxation in the system. It involves also the time scales of the Hamiltonian, but generally the idea of separation of time scales is important. There is also another important ingredient in the derivation, which is very often hidden because it's somehow most derivations are simplified and they do not go into certain details. Namely, there is a kind of Gaussian or Poisson properties of the bath. This allows to apply this kind of approximation not in extreme case of very low interaction. It somehow enlarges the validity of Markovian approximation for other systems. Why? Why this kind of Gaussian properties? I mean, Gaussian properties for multi-time correlation functions for the bath, that they somehow can be multi-time correlation functions can be estimated by products of two-time correlation functions. This very often happens in physical systems when the bath is enough large and complicated, because it's more or less related to the central limit theorem, which says that so many types of measurable quantities can be approximated by Gaussian variables. And this Gaussianity allows you to do the first step in the approximation, to keep only the terms proportional to the square of coupling constant. The other terms in the strictly Gaussian case disappear. So this is why Markovian approximation is much better than one could expect looking at derivation, because in the derivation you can notice that one should get the right result only for very, very small coupling. It's not the case. Even for moderate, strong coupling, for moderate coupling to the bath, because of these properties, Markovian master equation, works quite well. This is very similar to the case of Boltzmann equation. So again, when you try to derive Boltzmann equation, it seems that it can be valid only in the limit of very low density gas. But it can be even experimentally checked that Boltzmann equation is much better. It works for dense gas, and even one can use it for fluids to derive some hydrodynamical equations. Okay, so now about thermodynamics. So here I present something what can be found in my paper in 79, but okay, because I know it, that I can say something more about this. So this was the idea to use this mathematical tools developed in the 70s, namely Markov and Master equation, to thermodynamics. So the situation is the following, that we have open system. We have system S interacting with several heat baths at different temperature, and we have some external control given by the Hamiltonian of the system. And we assume here that this variation, time scale of variation is long. So it means that essentially this is a very slow process in comparison with some other parameters. But so in a sense, this is close to adiabatic approximation for quantum mechanics, for Schrödinger equation. So the idea is first to apply some one of these types of derivation to get the master equation, which now has time dependence not only in Hamiltonian, but it has time dependence also in the dissipative part of the generator of the right-hand side. You see that in this case, there's additivity. So this heat bath act in additive way. And moreover, because it's slowly varying, so somehow it adapts itself to temporal Hamiltonian, what means that the stationary state at every moment for any piece of this generator is a Gibbs state corresponding to the temperature of this heat bath and Hamiltonian exactly in at this time, at this moment of time. Then you can derive from this scheme two basic laws of thermodynamics. The first one is essentially a definition, because when this is internal energy, it's a total energy of the system S. So we can decompose it into a change due to work, so to time derivative of the Hamiltonian, and this part which depends on the time derivative of the density matrix, which can essentially depends only on this R and can be decomposed into contributions from all generators. So this is the form of the second law, which is exactly what one uses in, say, phenomenological approach to thermodynamics. The main ingredient to derive this second law is a property of, I called it Schwann inequality. So this is a kind of mathematical relation, but it follows from the fact that relative entropy always decreases under the action of completely positive maps. So this is one of the basic features of dynamical, of completely positive trace preserving maps. And applying this, you can get a useful inequality, which many times was used to derive a kind of second law. So this is the first scheme, which we understand very well, so slowly varying external condition. There is also another possibility, which I understand at least, is a somehow opposite case, where we have fast periodic modulation. So it's also possessing quite a large range of application. And here we should combine the Floquet theory for systems of differential equations which are which possess periodic coefficients. So there is a whole theory, and one can combine this with this weak coupling or low density limit. This was not done, in fact, but I think it should be very easy to get another type of Markov and Master equation with time-dependent generator, which has quite special structure. There is some time-independent Lindat, Gorini, Kosakowski, Sudarshan type generator, and we have a sandwich with this unitary, which is a solution of it's a propagator for the time-dependent Hamiltonian. So it has quite a special quite special structure. So now, what we can derive? Already with the first law, there is a problem where one cannot get, in general situation, the unique decomposition into work heat. I think it's, I'm not sure, but it's probably quite fundamental that only when the external control is slow, we can really decompose in unique way which part of energy can be treated as a part of internal energy and which part can be treated as work. Now, there is some ambiguity. And this ambiguity can be solved only under stationary conditions. So in this case, it means that there are typically limit cycles, because we consider a periodically perturbed system. So in generic situation, it reaches a limit cycle, and under condition of limit cycle, one can derive a first law, because somehow then the situation is clear. The second law is valid for all time of the evolution. It's again based on Spohn inequality. It's a bit more complicated because the formula for the currents are complicated. They involve also the exchange of energy quanta with this external source of periodic perturbation. But I think physically they are quite intuitive, and one can find them in the paper. So this is something what these two classes of open system with external control, for which we can have a well-defined thermodynamic relation, and which I understand. Maybe there are others which are less, for me, clear. There's also another approach to the problem, namely using, instead of time-dependent evolution with continuous time, using the picture of cycles, so reciprocating engines and refrigerators. So here we consider cycles, and one decomposes the cycles, which is generally a completely positive dynamical map, which can be decomposed into physically meaningful cycles related to them, coupling the system to reservoir, and then decoupling this and doing something. So like in the standard description of, say, steam engines, for example, in textbook, but here done on the level of quantum systems. So quite a number of papers were written by Ronnie Koslos on this topic. But there is also a kind of relation to this continuous time approach, namely to construct a single dynamical map for the cycle, you use some kind of intuition of coupling system to reservoir, and then you derive the form of these maps, essentially using a kind of Markovian picture behind. So you have to find some GKLS generator and exponentiate it to get a well-defined, completely positive map.
So UJ is not a unitary here.
No, it's I took original notation.
What was lambda before?
No, it's lambda. It's like lambda before, but I took the notation from this article. So this is generally completely positive. And what is also interesting for this, to get some action of these engines, this map should not commute. So that is important, this sequence of cycles. So there is quite a lot of interesting results also on this engines with strokes. Okay, so at the end, I would like to speak about some challenges, which are challenges from my perspective. Perhaps for you, they could be completely different topics, but okay. The first one, which I would like to also illustrate by this model of spin boson system, is the problem, what should we do when we have strongly coupled and correlated system, I mean, our system and bus. So when this idea of weak coupling, low density limit, and product state assumption as the initial state, they're doubtful. So, okay, there are different ways to deal with, many of you know better how to do it. The second one is, it's still not, I think, completely solved or even formulated problem of fully autonomous quantum machines. They should be fully quantum, because in all this example, somehow behind the scene, there are some deterministic external agents. So this is a time-dependent Hamiltonian, which means that we have some external driving. Also, for stroke engine, we have the cycle, so we have to connect the system to the bus and disconnect, and this is also a kind of external action. So one would like to have a completely autonomous description without this classical or semi-classical components. Then the quantum of the question of quantum supremacy. So, do we have some really quantum effect which can improve efficiency or something like that in the case of quantum machines? So, at the moment, it's a matter of faith. So, but okay, one should look for that. And this, the last topic which I wanted to add here is the information thermodynamics link. So the basic question for me is information entropy of Shannon, does it related is it related to thermodynamical entropy? So some people believe that the answer is yes, some no, and this is also an ongoing discussion. So essentially, this is the place maybe when I can stop, if you like, and if you'd like to ask questions.
Are you primarily interested in the cases where the system is a single spin, small system, or are you interested also in cases where the system is in the thermodynamic limit, but coupled to a bigger bar?
Yes, I was interested in both cases. So essentially, I mean, recently I'm interested in such devices like solar cells or fuel cells, so where the system is a total system of electrons. So, but of course, when you go to thermodynamic limit with the system, you have all problems with the derivation of Markovian master equation and things like that. So this is another very tricky business. Yeah.
Can you go back to the your first example when you were deriving these thermal laws? Yes. So you, I think that maybe one before that. Okay. All right. At one point when you were deriving the second law and the first law,
yes,
you made this assumption that your dissipator annihilated the equilibrium, instantaneous equilibrium.
Yes, this. Yes.
So my question is, isn't this cheating? because you somehow assume the form of the equilibrium distribution to be of a Boltzmann form, and then from that, then you derive the first and second law as consequences.
Okay.
Whereas in principle, you might be stuck in some situation where you don't actually go to this Boltzmann-like distribution, and then this derivation
exactly.
of the laws wouldn't be applicable.
Okay, so what are assumptions? Assumptions are that these bars are at thermal equilibrium. And then if you have a single bus and you have weakly coupled small system, then you can prove that this bus drives your system to the Gibbs state. So this can be proved.
But are there counterexamples if you have special symmetries in the system, for example, that you don't thermalize properly?
Yes, exactly. So this is under some ergodicity assumption that you don't have other constant of motion, say. So that there is a kind of ergodicity assumption that the operators which appear somewhere in the interaction Hamiltonian, they all commute only with identity. So there are not other constant of motions. And then this is the consequence of this assumption that I start with heat bus. But you can extend this to more general situation where the bus are at stationary state but not Gibbs. So we have such a paper on that. And for this, you can also derive a kind of similar equation, but okay, this is another topic.
So could you tell us in more detail what you do when you have the driven case? What is the stationary state that you are assuming is limiting the cycle? How does that look like? For the next example. So you just, the next slide, if you go to the next slide, yeah.
The next slide, yes, okay.
So yeah, you just told us what it was, but you didn't tell us how the first law and the second law look like.
Okay. This is something, the idea that is a bit more complicated, so you have first to find the structure of this generator. And this generator has a kind of complicated structure, but okay, maybe I... You know, the structure, this limb data, in the simplest case, I don't want to put too many indices. There is always the following structure. There are some operators which decrease energy of the system by omega, and the adjoint operator which increase energy. So this is for the system without periodic perturbation. And there are some coefficients, so let's call them H of omega. Here is a Hermitian conjugation. So this is, I'm writing to write the structure of the generator for the system coupled to the heat bus. In the simplest way, where the interaction Hamiltonian is very simple, times A times some B for the bus. So this is the Fourier decomposition with respect to dynamics of this operator. And this object comes from the autocorrelation function, Fourier transform of the autocorrelation function for the bus operator. And then for the thermal bus, you take here only positive energy differences, and then you have the term which looks like this, but with additional Boltzmann term. And again, H of omega, and here is reverse order. So first, creation of energy quanta, and then annihilation. So this is a kind of standard. I called it usually Davis generator because he was the first who derived this kind of master equations. And now when you add this periodic perturbation with the period T, so we have frequency, natural frequency, omega 2 pi over tau. And then in this system, okay, I don't have another color, you have modifying this in terms of standard Bohr frequency, so energy difference between the levels of our system S, you should also add omega plus k, where k are 0 plus minus 1, the harmonic of this perturbation frequency. So this is a complication which appears. And then, because this object appears, this object shows essentially the time derivative, this irreversible type part of time derivative, they enter the expression for currents, heat currents. And with these heat currents, one can get the first law and also the second law if you divide, if you introduce temperature and so on. So this is a quite long derivation, but generally the idea is to find the structure of Markov and Master equations in the case of periodic perturbation and define these currents. And these currents depend on the assumptions over all possible harmonics of this external perturbation. So it means that the system also absorbs or emits quanta to the source of periodic perturbation. I don't know if this was...
I was just wondering, what is the stationary state? I mean, in the
Yes. So then you get this, which is a sum of pieces like that. And then you can have stationary state for this. Typically, you have for finite dimension system, you always have. But for reasonable systems, even in finite dimension. And this stationary state, and the limit cycle is has the following structure. It's this U of t, and here this stationary state for this generator with bar. So you first compute the generator with bar, and then you allow it to be rotated by this this unitary.
What about the separation time scales in the case of the fast drivings?
Okay, so they should be this tau should, or omega should be comparable to typical Bohr frequencies which are involved in physical processes. So it cannot be very slow because, as always in the derivation of Markov and Master equations, there are some averaging procedures, some integral with oscillating terms. So, and they should really effectively average things. So this is the condition that that omega is comparable with relevant energy differences in the system which are involved in the dissipative process. This is why it's rather applicable to quantum optics when the driving comes from laser field, which can be treated semi-classically, because it has frequency comparable to energy difference in some atomic or molecular system. In the first case, it should be slower, and this is why it's applied to other type of devices like solar cells, for example.
If I was going to study a stroke engine,
yes.
And I wanted to compute work, and yes. Maybe I will do two dimensions protocol to understand work. Mm-hmm. But in these continuously driven engines, I don't see where the measurement comes into play. How would you put into place, or how would you compare the work that you study here, or the power that you have here, with the work that we will have in stroke engine where we do two dimensional?
I think in stroke engine you can. Okay, I'm not. Maybe I don't know the whole literature, but generally it's somehow because the strokes then compose into the parts when you, for example, have only purely unitary transformation. So then work is essentially energy difference. And then you may have situation where you have only heat exchange. So that doesn't contribute to work. So basically I see I believe that in most cases for stroke energy is simply the balance of energy computed for the strokes in which you do not have dissipation. Only energy changes. And the continuous scales, these things mix up, yes, at the moment you have both dissipation and work.
Okay, shall we go on to the next part of your talk?
If you like, if you are not completely bored.
Yeah, so if we, I think we're, if you have to go, that's of course fine, but yeah, I think we're ready for
okay.
Part two.
Thank you. So okay, so let me discuss some issues connected to the simplest model of spin boson system. So the idea is to take a two-level system, which we can think about this as a spin, which interacts with a bosonic field, or in other words, we can say with a family of harmonic oscillators. Because at certain moment it's good to go to infinite volume limit, then this model will describe also field, continuous field. And the simplest possible Hamiltonian is constructed in the following way. We assume that these two states are not degenerated, possess the same energy, and moreover, so this is a Hamiltonian of the system of oscillators, or of the bosonic field, and here we have the simplest possible coupling. So in some sense, environment fields in which of these two states we can find spin. And the coupling constant is time dependent, because we would like also to discuss a bit of thermodynamics of this model to see what happens when we switch on or switch off the interaction between the system and the bus. Another, I think, nice model we can think about, this is a particle in double well potential, and the approximation that we consider only these two essentially degenerate lowest lying level. So this is a universal model for many phenomena.
Quick question.
Yes.
It seems like you don't have any tunneling terms.
I don't have any tunneling terms at the moment. I will speak about this later, what happens. So this is really the simplest situation. But tunneling can be added at the end. And I start with ground states to understand a little bit what physically happened when you couple such a system to the bus. So the first trivial situation is where there is no coupling. So we have two ground states. Spin is in two possible states, and the field is in the vacuum states. And the ground energy can be assumed to be here zero. Put this value. What happens when we put some lambda, say, equal to 1? We obtain, again, two degenerated ground states, but they have much more interesting structure. So there is always a correlation between the position, say, of this particle and the perturbation or deformation of the field or of the system or harmonic oscillator. So always a kind of cloud, in field theory one says sometimes boson cloud, is formed around this state. And there are different states of the field. So one is with sign plus, one is with sign minus. What is the structure of this state? So it's very easy to show that these states are coherent states. So it means that in the picture of oscillators, there are products of coherent states given by this number. So this is fk divided by omega k. So we have such two coherent clouds. Each of this cloud is associated with, say, the position of this particle. So it's really remain, there's some trace there is some hole deep by the particle. Okay, and there are two parameters which characterize this ground state. The first one is a ground energy, which is now negative because the system has lower energy, and it's given by a kind of sum. You can see that in the limit of, say, infinite volume limit for this bosonic field, this would be replaced by integral and need not to be finite. It can be also minus infinity, in principle, if we integrate it over all modes. And the second parameter is the overlap of these two coherent states. Again, this overlap is exponentially small, with some factor similar to this factor, but there is a second power of omega. So they are different. So what can it describe physically? So first of all, this model illustrates a phenomenon which was already recognized in the 50s by Van Hove, and this is essentially the simplest instance of all these problems with renormalization in quantum field theory. But later, this what was a problem for quantum field theory was began to be interesting feature in statistical mechanics of infinite system, namely in description of phase transition. So what may happen? For example, this term which describes the exponential decay of correlation can be replaced by integral in the infinite volume, and then in principle it can go to infinity when we remove some cutoffs for small frequencies. So this is called infrared catastrophe. So if you do not have any natural physical limitation of the on the minimum omega, in many physically important systems, you get this factor infinite. What does it mean? It means that the overlap of two coherent states is zero. It cannot be. Coherent states are never orthogonal. So this limit can be realized only when we go outside the scheme of Fock space as a Hilbert space and so on. One can do it mathematically proper in the language of algebraic approach to quantum theory, and then you will get that this, in this limit, this both states are meaningful, but they belong to different sectors of the Hilbert space which emerge there. So it means that we have what we obtain disjoint states, and we obtain what is called superselection rule. So it means that superpositions of these two states of the field do not exist physically. So this is one of the roads to classicality, by employing this fact that we may have situation which physically it looks reasonable, but when you go into details, you will see that something changed dramatically. And this is essentially the idea behind of a rigorous approach to phase transitions. We know that, strictly speaking, phase transitions as discontinuities with respect to some parameter, they can appear only in infinite volume system, in the thermodynamic limit. For any finite system, you do not have phase transition. One can prove that some functions are analytical, so they cannot have any jump. So to describe mathematically phase transition, we need to go to this thermodynamic limit. Of course, there are people who do not like thermodynamic limit. They say this is a mathematical artifact. But on the other hand, phase transition exists and then appear also for finite systems. So it means that the finite system is large enough, it is much closer to this abstract infinite system than to a few particle system we are used to deal with. So one should take seriously this effects of super selection rules. I mean, tell something.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, of course.
So you've taken the bath to be zero temperature.
Yes.
And that doesn't feel very classical. I mean, it's like, you know, what happens if you put the bath at finite temperature? It seems like then you get rid of the orthogonality catastrophe.
No, this remains also for finite temperature, the situation. You have to define the, when you remove all these cutoffs, you also have to define the equilibrium state as so-called KMS state in the approach, in the algebraic approach, as they also live into different components of the Hilbert space when you want to represent them. So they have completely disjoint supports.
But doesn't that depend on the forms of these Fs and Ks?
Yes, this depends on this form. But this is something, in a realistic system, you have usually rather strong coupling to low frequency modes. So this is something why for high omega you have some natural cutoffs, because at certain moment theory doesn't describe the energies higher than some threshold. But in this low frequency, I think this is something you can expect. You have this electrodynamics because of zero mass of photon. I think this is something what should really bother us, but on the other hand, it gives a chance to explain some phenomena which we do not understand. So if we do not have this catastrophe, so if this object is finite, what can happen? We can completely eliminate the interaction with the bus. We can introduce a new system of dressed spin or dressed particle, which include also a part of environment, include this cloud. And this is a formal unitary transformation which allows to change the variables to get a situation where you have two-level system completely decoupled from the bus. So this is called Polaron transformation solid-state physics. So you have to shift this creation annihilation operator for oscillators. Sigma three, this basic operator doesn't change, but sigma one changes. It becomes coupled in some sense to the bus, so it includes a kind of the cloud from the bus into the structure. So this is a unitary transformation which leads to the following Hamiltonian and this new variables. So the variables of spin disappear because this is the idea of this transformation. What remains is the Hamiltonian of this new deformed bosonic field. So if you think about this oscillator as a kind of modes or some solid state body which compose our environment, it's a kind of distortion of this environment by the system. And then you do not have any interaction. So this is something what we should often do in examples of open system, especially when you consider the strong complex scenario. You cannot do in this case this kind of trick with weak coupling limit, with product states and things like that. So one of the steps, there are also other possibilities, but one of the natural steps is to extract from the environment some relevant degrees of freedom which are strongly coupled to our system and construct a new system. And this new system, there is a hope that this new system is weakly coupled to the rest of the environment, and then it allows you to, in the next step, to apply the standard methods and get some master equations which are simple and nice. There was a question about tunneling. To add tunneling, we have to use this sigma 1 or sigma 2 matrix. It becomes complicated. So it means that this dressing influences tunneling. And the idea is essentially that this influences also strong and very physically important. So when we think about this picture with double wire potential, because maybe it's, and we have particle here, or it can be here. So the tunneling becomes weaker and weaker when this parameter grows. It means that essentially, okay, strictly speaking, no, this parameter, but related one, the height of the barrier is essentially minus the energy of ground state. This energy is negative, so here we have positive. So it's again, it grows in the case of this infrared catastrophe when coupling to low frequency modes becomes strong. So this is also the kind of the consistent mechanism. You can see what happens when this grows to infinity, then the tunneling is strongly suppressed and the system really becomes classical in a sense, because you have no chance to produce superposition. So this is another point of view on this phenomenon of superselection rule. It's a dynamical point of view. The previous was somehow static. Here is dynamical. And we have also both picture in the theory of phase transition. When we think about ferromagnet, you can apply abstract theory to show that different magnetization states are disjoint in some abstract Hilbert space. There is no superposition. But you can think also about the equilibrium state of the ferromagnet, and you see that there are many metastable states, which have a very long lifetime. When the size of the system increases, this lifetime grows. So this is a dynamical picture of the same phenomenon, that at a certain moment, you have the you do not have a single equilibrium state described by Gibbs density matrix, but you have many disjoint phases with a very long lifetime. So this is also what we can learn from this very, very simple model of spin boson system. Okay, now a little bit about thermodynamics. So we have to introduce some dynamics, so we switch on these interactions, starting from the zero value to some value lambda at time t0, and we can solve the Schrödinger equation to see what happened to the state. And we start with the ground state of spin, one of this ground state, and the vacuum state of the field. So you see what happened. During this time, depending on the initial state of the spin, we have a time-dependent coherent state of the field. And this time-dependent coherent state can be decomposed in two pieces. One is time-independent, this is this cloud, and the other is a traveling wave, which finally disappears somewhere in infinity. So you see that this is exactly the creation from the Bursis spin system. By switching on this interaction, we obtain this dress spin, but we also produce some heat. So this is, I think, also an interesting example, because there are sometimes problems with the definition, sometimes, often problem with the definition, what is heat, what is work. And often one says that heat is an energy which is transported into the bath. It need not to be always the case, because some of this energy remains as dressing. Only part is emitted, is traveling away, and essentially produce heat, because of course in this linear models we do not have a really nice ergodic properties, nice dissipation. It's only transport into infinity. And again, you can compute work, which is done, and this is this work here is negative because system somehow goes to some stable lower state, but a comparable part of the energy is dissipated as a positive in a form of the heat. So even this very simple model illustrates the various phenomena which can happen when you have strong coupling to environment. And strong means here not really that this lambda is very large. It means that the soft modes of the field are strongly coupled, are more coupled to our system than high energy modes. And this is often the situation which comes from particular models.
Excuse me. Are you saying that the work, in this situation, consider work as the change in energy?
It's changing energy because this is a total Hamiltonian system. So I know everything. So work essentially is a change of the energy of the system. We start from zero energy and we get some final energy. But so this is work from the point of view of this external agent which switches on this interaction. Yes, this external device has to invest some work, and then this work is changed into the energy of the field, and this is composed of two pieces. One is this cloud, which stays with the system. Another is a dissipating wave, which is transferred into heat later. Okay, so finally, something about information thermodynamics link, also illustrated by this spin boson mod. So this is essentially the main motivation historically for the belief that information entropy has something to do with thermodynamic entropy. So this is a kind of experiment by Schillard. So we start with a box and a single particle, and we put a partition. And then one believes that if we do not know where the particle is in which part of the box, and then we perform measurement, so this knowledge is somehow important and can be used to extract work. But this is, it sounds plausible if we think about partition as something mathematically abstract. But if you want to discuss this in physical terms, this partition must be a stable, essentially macroscopic system, at least incomparable to the single molecule, which is stable enough to be controlled in a well-defined sense, and for which fluctuation doesn't matter, because otherwise it would let this particle go to from one side to another one. So this should be a stable macroscopic system with many degrees of freedom. So one of the simplest way is to describe this process using just the previous Hamiltonian. So this partition is treated as a solid body, and this oscillators are simply the modes of deformation of this solid body. So they describe essentially phonons and this piece of material which is put inside the box. And according to what we know, the interaction with this particle changes the state of this macroscopic body. So this bending represents these two different coherent states, which depends on the position of particle. So from the very beginning, in some sense, the environment knows where particle is in this box. So our subjective knowledge doesn't matter at all. It doesn't introduce any new factor to the thermodynamics of the system. Moreover, the energy involved in this insertion of partition on removal is much higher than this KT logarithm 2, because it should be of the order of this potential barrier. And the energy of this potential barrier must be larger, essentially larger than KT, to stabilize the system at all. Otherwise, it would, this barrier would oscillate and let the particle go whenever it wish. So this small KT logarithm is completely irrelevant here, and we do not need any external measurement and the memory and things like that to describe the thermodynamics of this object. But this is an interesting general consequence of this picture, namely the appearance of superselection rule. So I try to convince you that interactions of system with a large environment, which consists of many degrees of freedom, under very often condition introduces superselection rule. So that it means there are some barriers between parts of the phase space of our system which are not penetrable. So if we assume that we have from this type of mechanism some superselection rule, which allows only to particle be only in one part of the box, but not in jump through this barrier, then we have to modify also the description, thermodynamical description of such system. So first we decompose the Hilbert space into ergodic components. So by ergodic component, I mean the subspace which is stable with respect to some class of perturbation. So it means that if the system is in this state, it in a reasonable time scale never moves to another part of the Hilbert space. So this is such a practical approach to superselection rule. And then if we think about the system as a whole, which is very often done, and we want to construct a mixed state, so superselection rules allows only this type of block degenerated density matrix. We cannot have coherences between different components of quantum system. Only this type of density matrix are allowed, and moreover, these probabilities are purely subjective, because the system is always in one of these components, here and here, and never goes to another one. This is only our lack of knowledge, which we may introduce by adding this probabilities. Therefore, if you want to speak about physical entropy of the system, we should not take the von Neumann entropy of this density matrix. We should average over von Neumann entropies for these ergodic components. So this is the averaging, and it gives something which is always lower than the von Neumann entropy, because one should extract this part of entropy which is purely informational. It does not contribute to the physics of the system, to thermodynamics. And this is something what I wanted to say about this link. So you see I have rather orthogonal views to the majority. And final slide is what I would like also to advocate. Everybody knows a formula for Landauer formula for the minimal cost of rising a bit, but essentially from this kind of reasoning one can say that it's also at least of order of magnitude the minimal cost of any single irreversible operation on the bit. But when you analyze the problem using kind of models, it was done already a long time ago by Brillouin, who analyzed measurement process of phonons and wanted to see what is the cost of such measurement if the accuracy of this measurement is given by a certain number, by a certain epsilon. He got the same result. Then later there's a paper of Kish, who did it for electronic switches. So applicable to the case of, say, standard classical computers, and obtained the same, almost the same result, essentially. And then I also did it a few years ago. You can find papers on archive. Also constructed a model of a switch to compute how much work we really needed to move the system from one to another state. And the model was based again on the spin boson model and environment with central temperature. And in all these three cases, one obtains the same result. So the minimal energy cost for the single switch operation is something what, let's think about this as kT for the moment, and logarithm not of 2, but 1 over epsilon, where epsilon is the probability of the error. Because any physical process also has some error, and moreover, any physical states are never completely localized. They have some tails which overlap here. So you are never sure that you encode properly your bit of information. There's always some error margin. And this error margin should appear in this formula for a single operation. This kT is generally replaced by something which also takes into account quantum correction, because even at zero temperature, there is possibility of tunneling between these two states over a barrier. So one should add this in the quantum case in the low temperature. This epsilon is also appears in another formula when you consider really the dynamics of this process jumping from one state to another and the lifetime. It shows that the lifetime of such protected information is given by the lifetime of unprotected one dividing by this epsilon. Of course, this is a rough approximation. So, in fact, it was the last thing I wanted to tell you. Thank you very much for the attention.
Divergent when epsilon goes to zero.
Okay, because if you want to have information always stable, then you have you need to increase this barrier to infinity. So we have infinite work to overcome this.
Yeah, I would like to make a comment on the last part on the information. For me, one should look at the details, but as if my initial system is decorrelated from my bath, which is at thermal equilibrium, and that's a big if, I would agree. But provided the class of initial conditions that we choose are these ones, we can always derive the fact that the change in von Neumann entropy of the system is bigger or equal to the heat divided by T, where the heat is defined as what goes into the environment and which would fit with your definition in the second law of the work being the total energy change in the total system due to this parametric driving.
Continue, please.
So that's kind of a theorem. Mm-hmm. And so in that sense, I'm confident that there it will always work. Beyond that, I don't know. And I don't even know how to formulate the second law. But how do you place what you're saying in.
So exactly, there are two issues. What you mentioned. First is this issue of product state. You see that it's never true for a real system because there are this kind of the clothes. It's not specific only for this model. It's very general. That to get a product state, you need some what the people now call resources. It's not easy to get a product state.
No, but in
for example, in this model, maybe I show. Okay, for this model, to get a product state, you have to reverse this traveling wave back to obtain the product state.
But why? Here precisely I thought it would work, because you start by coupling zero at time zero. So if I account for all the work done
yes,
during
if
the
you,
switching...
Yes, if you account this, but in this formula, what you mentioned, this is a kind of tautology. I know it's very well, but it doesn't, it has nothing to do with physics, because it, in this assumption of product state, you already omit this first stage of preparing a product state, and it may cost work comparable to many KT. There is also another problem, which related to product state. If you have a small system and very large system, and if you write a product state, okay. So, okay, pass. So, and the arguments which applies the total entropy of the total system are physically at least delicate. I would say dubious. Why? Because entropy is discontinuous for a system at high dimension, in the sense that a very small change of the state produces a big jump in the entropy proportional to the logarithm of the dimension of this bus. So if some derivation of theorem is unstable with the respect of slightly perturbing this initial state, I don't think it's physically trustful.
But usually the way the second law I was mentioning is derived only uses the fact that the total entropy in the full space is conserved under the Hamiltonian dynamics, and no other state.
Yes, but this is important ingredient.
But what I would, I'm not, you know, of course I agree with you that this is an assumption, and but I would also say that in some certain situation it is meaningful, like in scattering theory, it's very meaningful to use this product state assumption. So it's not everything, but
no,
it depends whether
of
or not
course I sense. Use it to derive a master equation, but not in the constant, in the context when in the derivation you use the total entropy of the system. I mean.
But it's conserved, right? That one is.
You know, this is my experience from mathematical physics. If something becomes completely senseless in a thermodynamic limit, then it's somehow physically unstable. Entropy of the bus is infinite in thermodynamic limit. Only density of the entropy makes sense. Sure. And there are always fluctuations of the order of square root of n. And in this fluctuation, anything comparable to entropy of the small system can be hidden. So this kind of reasoning, for me, is not useful from the physical point of view.
Yeah, but you know, we only use in that derivation the fact that the total Shannon entropy, von Neumann entropy is conserved. And then, as we do in physics, if you show this for finite n, then you take n to infinity, the conservation will still be
no,
there.
It's not so simple. Take any piece of macroscopic matter, and you want to calculate the total entropy. If one of these atoms evaporates somewhere, then entropy changes, but find an amount, but it's completely physically irrelevant. So any changes of entropy in these big systems, which are comparable to natural fluctuations, are irrelevant. And this is much larger than the entropy of the small system you are interested in. So one should be very careful with with the arguments based on the total balance of entropy of the system if one component can be large.
Yeah, but I'm sure you agree that the von Neumann entropy of the total system will still be conserved under Hamiltonian dynamics, even in the large N.
Yes, but this is irrelevant because you can get completely different result, which is slightly perturb the initial state. It's not a stable.
Physically.
And also mathematically, because entropy is a very dead function in a sense. It's very nice, but from the point of view of differentiability, it's very bad. And this is why you should be very careful with system which possess high dimensional Hilbert space.
I wanted to ask about your last slide about the conclusions you drew. So it seems like you're drawing a very general conclusion that these Landauer bounds are simply irrelevant, right? Yes,
this is my point.
So let me probe you a little bit. Suppose I have, for example, a system like you draw there, where you have a single particle, say, in a double well, and then rather than using a big macroscopic wall or something like that to divide my two partitions, say I use like a single spin to then figure out is it in the left well or the right well, and then do an operation on that. So if I've used really a quantum version of this, can I get around your objection?
No, but sooner or later you have to introduce a measuring apparatus. And exactly this spin boson model is also the model of measuring apparatus. It correlates spin up and down with clouds with positive and negative side. So again, you have at certain moment to introduce this, and then you get all these energy scales which are much higher than KT, because you want also to stabilize the measurement apparatus. It cannot fluctuate like this. I mean, this is the old arguments I should mention of Smoluchowski from 1912 about Maxwell Demon. So it was 100 years last year of his death. I think he presented the best argument exactly based on this fact that either the observer or any mechanical device which tries to control some small device and particle of gas must be in some sense stable with respect to fluctuation, so therefore it must be large, and then it leads us to energy scale much larger than KT.
Well, if I could make a last comment, I think from my standpoint, with these initial conditions, it's saying all this information business is only a reformulation of the second law. And since beyond the factorized initial condition, I think we don't even really know how to formulate a quantum thermodynamics in general, I'm not surprised that by looking at different models, one can get very different answer than the Landauer bounds and the Szilard, etc. So I think the fundamental question behind what you're raising is how do we formulate a consistent first and second law when there are these initially correlated states? And this, I think, is still a very open question in quantum terms.
Yes. This is why I think it good to study some models which are almost exactly solvable, like the spin boson models, and really try to go to some details.
Okay, I think we're done. Thank you so much. Thank you.